speak up.
Oh. Hello?
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Call our guest line during the live show and talk about wine on air. Dial area code 646-727-3235. From coast to coast.
Spacer, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on, and our phone lines are open. In the U.S., call 646-727-3235.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boys Lick Winery.
Brotherhood.
Gamma's Prairie Winery.
Andia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah, that's fantastic.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Joy Joy of Wine.
Lavinia.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Heber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry. Although, sometimes we do get off track.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
Belvoir Winery. I've heard voices at the winery.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
It's All About Wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Awesome.
Wow.
It was raining earlier, and they're just happy to be anywhere.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
That's good.
Welcome to the program, and we are, I'm Mike, and Ron is, as always, host tonight, and we're talking about Texas tonight. And I guess we'll just talk amongst ourselves.
Yes, yes, we will.
Texas, if you live in Texas, tell the wineries to get in touch with me. Emailed a whole bunch of wineries and nobody responded. I emailed 25 wineries in South Dakota and I got like 6 responses. I emailed 30 wineries in Texas to start with here and I got 0 response. So if you know anybody in Texas, tell them, get in touch with us. We want to.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and they may be harvesting too. It may be that time of year where they may be very busy in harvesting because a lot of places are. And, you know, so I'll make some excuses for them.
During
the summer?
Did they do that during the summer? Really?
Hmm. Yeah, it's some of the grapes are getting close to harvest now. August, if you remember, a lot of our wineries we talked to start talking about harvesting the beginning of August and second week in August and stuff like that. So they may be gearing up to do a harvest or maybe just starting it or something. So. You know, I'll make some excuses for them. We want to talk to you in Texas. So.
Yeah, and if you're in Texas and you know of some good wine places or what your favorite is, you can call us now as well. I mean, there's a possibility there, so give us a call. I mean, I have been to one myself, and because I was on vacation there, and it's my home state anyway, but I was on vacation there in 2005.
Is Texas your favorite? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, from San Antonio. So,
oh, really?
The river, oh, yeah. And on one little trip, I decided to go around to the hill country and found a winery and big place, and maybe we'll contact them and tell them, hey, I drank your wine. I've been there, and you need to come on our program or else.
There you go. That's it. Hey,
we'll send our people over there.
Yeah, really.
Hey, that would be good.
Well, you know, I've mentioned this before. Ever since we opened, I've been asked people bring me a wine from different states, and I've got 49 of the 50 so far. I don't have Wyoming, and I will get it when we talk Wyoming. I'm sure I'll make a deal with somebody. But
yep.
Texas, for years, people from Texas came in and they said, "Oh, I'll bring you a wine from Texas. We're always making trips to Florida, and I'll bring you one. And I heard this for years. I mean, 5-6 years, people were telling me they're going. Finally, I got one. So, you know, maybe they're just so concerned about becoming an independent country that they don't think about doing that. So.
That's part of it, probably.
Yeah.
So, but there's definitely wineries out there. We just got to maybe, like you said, they're busy. So, I don't know. Hopefully, we'll get in touch with somebody and have them talk about it from the people who are there. And otherwise, we'll just. You do your fact checking and present it to the people, and there you go.
We did that at the beginning. Just talked about the wineries without interviewing, so we can always do that with Texas. So don't like doing it anymore. I mean, we love our guests, but it's
always that. So get on the program, call us, and we'll talk about wine tonight. Area code 646, which is not a Texas number. It's it's up in space somewhere. 646-727-3235, and I believe that's in New York. So your call will go up to some satellite up in space, come back down to us, and we will answer your call. Give us a call anytime.
Open mic too. I mean, if you have any subjects on wine, then we'll talk about anything on wine tonight. So,
well, I haven't heard that yet on here. Open mic.
Open
mic night. Open mic
open
night.
Mic?
I know about what.
There you go.
Well, this is part two of Texas, right? Okay.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, but hey, if you're tuning in to listen about Texas, I am going to tell you stuff about Texas. I'm going to talk about Texas. Usually I cover these subjects before we start interviewing people for a state or something. I usually tell you about different information on it and all that, but we've had the interviews and we bounced around, so I'm going to fill everyone in tonight on that. So, And, if you're out there and you want to listen to, or you want to pick up Mike, he tweets during the show, too. I mean, I always got to remind people of that going on. I had a state audit last Tuesday, and it went well. We did okay on it, but I was telling the girl who audited me, she listens to the program, and she told her that you tweet, and she was all excited about that because she's into tweeting, and so she's looking forward to getting your tweets on the program. About her too, I have to bring up. She has listened to back episodes of the program. She's listened to them quite a few times. She said, but the one that we did with the man that wrote the book on the Finger Lakes. Using the Finger Lakes, the background, Finger Lakes area, and the people, and he's a newscaster for Channel 11 in Rochester, I think it was, or something like that. She listened to his that interview, and she went out and got his book, and she said she's a reader. She reads a lot of books. She said when she started to read his, she couldn't put it down. She said it was great. She just read the thing all the way through. She said she's got a lot of books that she floats and, reads a little bit of this, reads a little bit of that. She said that was one of those books where she absolutely loved. And she said it was like you got to know the people he was writing about. And they're real people, by the way. I don't know if you remember that, but they're real people. And she said it's just like she got to know the people in there. And she says some of them were jerks and some of them were great people and stuff like this. But he did a great job of writing it. And she said it was a wonderful book. And she said that about 2 months after she finished the book, she's from New York herself, so she gets some New York news and stuff. About 2 weeks after she finished reading the book, one of the people that was in the book was in an auto accident and was killed in the auto accident. And she said it felt like she lost somebody she knew. She said it just, he wrote this so well and just introducing people and told about and all that. And she said felt like she really lost a friend. And so he did a great job on the book. He did a great job of writing and all that. And she can attest to the fact that it really, really was a very nice book. So
If you haven't read it yet, I don't know. It's a back episode that we did, and I'm sure Mike can find that for us while
yeah,
I'm talking
that's
here.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and you can tune into that, and he'll tell you about the book and all that. And he also said he was writing another book, and we really do need to get a hold of him again and see if maybe we, you know, if he's written a second book and if he's willing to talk to us about that one. And so, but yeah, she was really, really quite impressed with the book, and she said it takes place in the wine country, the Finger Lakes area, and he actually introduces the people and tells about the people and all that. And she said it's just fascinating. It's just like you know the people when you finish reading the book. It's very good, very real, very well written, and she enjoyed it tremendously. So, and she's a reader.
Evan Dawson.
There you go.
The author of Summer in a Glass.
That's
the coming of age of winemaking in the Finger Lakes. That was from September 2011.
Wow. So that almost 2 years ago. Yeah, so if you get an opportunity, check out the old one, and all the information is there. And if you haven't read the book, we have to say that it has been reviewed by someone I know, and they said it's great. So there you go.
All right. Very cool.
Yeah. So we are going to talk a little bit about Texas and tell you some backgrounds on that. Then I've got some other information here, just a bunch of stuff to pass on to you. It's one of those shows where, you know, it's just all about wine, and we're just going to fill you in on some stuff and all. And if you have any comments, as always, give us a call or email me or Facebook. We're on Facebook. Any number of ways you can get a hold of us, and we'll be more than happy to address the issues that you bring up. But first, Texas, the great state of Texas. We'll always bring up the maps of Texas, and we'll always tell you about the maps of Texas. So we'll start with that. Texas has 254 counties, a lot of them nice and pretty square ones to the western part of the state, then a bunch of funny shaped ones to the eastern part of the state, but 254 counties. Not only are they the biggest state, but I think they probably have the most counties, too. I don't know for, what was that my engineer said? Yeah, but Alaska may is bigger, but it may not have the counties divided up. It's Texas is one of the biggest states, the second largest state, but a lot of counties. Roads. Amarillo is up in the Panhandle. Northern Panhandle, Highway 40 goes through Amarillo. Highway 27 goes out of Amarillo to Lubbock, Texas. And that's all 27 goes, just that short distance. Lubbock, isn't there a state university or something in Lubbock, or something there? Going from El Paso over in the far western part of the state, and running all the way from El Paso through San Antonio and then on out east through Houston is Highway 10, one of the big, big, good southern routes going through this country. Branching off Highway 10, going north through Abilene and into Fort Worth, Dallas area, Highway 20, and then exits on into Louisiana. I-35. Comes north out of, I-35 goes through Kansas City, and that's where I'm originally from. I-35 goes up to Iowa and on up to the Canada, but I-35 comes into Texas, Denton and through Dallas, on down San Antonio, and on to Laredo at the southern end of it. I-45 also branches off out of Dallas and goes through Houston and into the Galveston area, and then one little branch, 30, out of Dallas also is heading on up toward Arkansas area. So some major roads going all through Texas, but with the size of Texas, we would expect that. A lot of major highways running through there. The physical map of Texas, eastern part of Texas, is the lowlands, lower areas, Obviously, right next to the Gulf of Mexico. You go out into the panhandle and actually the far western part of Texas, you start getting your elevations and stuff like that. Some major elevations. Actually, the highest point in Texas is Guadalupe Peak at 8,749 feet. The lowest point, Gulf of Mexico, right down on the water. So that's it's quite a diversified elevation map on Texas running from east to west. And most of the wineries are in the east because of that. We have a few that we're going to be hopefully talking to in the west, but most of them are in the east, running in the wetter climates. Rivers, there's a lot of rivers run through Texas when you have a state this size. The Rio Grande is the border, obviously, between Texas and Mexico, and that starts way on over north of El Paso and runs the entire length to the Gulf of Mexico, which forms your funny shapes down at the bottom of Texas. Actually, that's the border. Got some major rivers. Colorado River is through there. Everything basically runs into the Gulf of Mexico. Everything's running east into the Gulf of Mexico. So coming out of the hills and mountains of the western part of the state and running into the Gulf of Mexico. Red River is the northern border of Texas, between Oklahoma and Texas, on the northeastern border. And a lot of major rivers, San Antonio River, all sorts of stuff running through Texas because of, obviously, the size. So that's a little bit about the state of Texas as far as the maps go. Oh, wait a minute. I can't do that. Let's see. But if I do that, it's going to close this, and I don't want to close this. Okay, there you go. The state of Texas is the second most populous and the second largest of the 50 states in the United States. It's the largest, obviously, in the contiguous contiguous 48 states here. It is bordered on the south by Mexico, the country. New Mexico is the western border state. North of Texas, all along the border there, is Oklahoma. In the northeastern corner of Texas, it touches Arkansas. And then to the east, Louisiana. Texas is over 268,000 square miles, or 696,000 square kilometers. So obviously a large state. It is San Antonio, Mike's hometown, is the second largest city in the state. A lot of Spanish spoken there, 68% English and 28% Spanish spoken in the state. The capital, Austin, the population is mostly in the eastern part of the state because of the hills and the dry areas and stuff like that. Actually, most of the states in the central time zone, although there is the tip of West Texas, jumps over into the mountain time zone. It is mountainous, flat. Most people are aware of Texas and the size of it and all that stuff. 590 native species of birds there, over 213 species of reptile and amphibians. A large state with a lot of diversity and a lot of different climates and everything there. So, I'm sure everyone has talked about and seen Texas and all that. I'm not going to get into a whole bunch of details about the state of Texas here. Really no need to. We'll jump back here and talk about Texas wine. That's really what this is about, Texas wine. Some of the earliest recorded Texas wines were produced by the Spanish missionaries in the 1650s near El Paso, Texas. The state has over 36 members of the Vitis grape family, the Vitis family grapes. In 2006, the state had 3,200 acres of Vitis vinifera planted. It is very diversified in their winemaking in the state of Texas. The grapes produced there, and you know, there's quite a long list here. I'm not going to read all of them. It ranges all the way from the Blanc de Roy, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Carignan, Chardonnays, Gewurztraminers, Malbecs, Merlots, Malverde, Muscadines, Noble, Norton, Orange Muscat, Pinot Gris, Pinot Noir, Printivo, which, you know, is that the Zinfandel? People say no, some say yes. They also have Zinfandel listed here, Sémillon Syrah, Sauvignon Musk, Scuppernongs, quite a diversified amount of grapes that can be grown in Texas. But again, when you look at the relief map, you can understand that because there are so many different climates and microclimates and all that. Texas is the home to 8 AVAs, American Viticulture Areas. Mesilla Valley AVA is located in West Texas. This is Texas's first AVA, and actually it's primarily located in New Mexico, with only a small part of that extending into Texas. Mesilla Valley AVA. Bell Mountain AVA, established in 1986. It's in Central Texas. This is the first AVA that was completely within the state of Texas, and is known for its Cabernet Sauvignon, distinct Cabernet Sauvignon grapes. I've never had a Texas Cabernet Sauvignon from this AVA. That might be interesting. That's in Gillespie County, actually, where most of it is the Bell Mountain AVA. Fredericksburg and the Texas Hill Country AVA, and that's actually the name of the AVA. That was established in 1989. That's in Central Texas. Again, known for its Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay. Texas Hill Country AVA. This was established in 1991. This is also located in Central Texas, just west of Austin. A very large AVA. It is over 9 million acres of land. It is in the second largest. It is the second largest AVA in the United States. Although less than 800 acres are planted in grapevines. Now, to me that just sounds very odd. You have an AVA that is over 9 million acres in size, and you only have 800 acres planted in grapevines. The AVA sometimes drive me nuts, and I've talked about this way in the past, but you know, you have AVAs that are 9 million acres. Obviously, on a 9 million acre AVA, you are going to have a lot of different climates, a lot of different microclimates, a lot of influence from different things. And so, you know, you're calling this an American Viticulture Area. It's just like the Mississippi Valley AVA that runs from Minnesota all the way down to, I don't know, Kentucky or Arkansas or something. You know, there's so many different types of stuff in that area. It just, you know, to call it an AVA, I don't make the rules. I just, you know, read about it here, but I can still comment. Escondido Valley AVA. This is established in 1992. It's in West Texas, about 3,200 acres along the Pecos River in Pecos County. Texas High Plains AVA, established in 1993. This is in North Texas. Again, the Texas Hill Country is considered the most promising up-and-coming AVA, specializing in the production of Cabernet Sauvignon, and it covers over 8 million acres, with 3,500 acres are planted, with 20 wineries currently producing wines out of this, the Texas High Plains. I'm curious about something here. If it shows, and it doesn't show, and the things I'm on don't show how much these overlap, which is really sad because I know they must overlap quite a bit. The Texas Hill Country AVA, let's jump back to that. Most of the local Texas German population have grape varietals grown in the Hill Country, originate from France, Italy, Spain, rather than from the cooler climates of Germany. Obviously, it's not cool enough to grow those, but that's Texas Hill Country there. The Texas High Plains AVA, and I wish they'd show maps of these AVAs on this. They don't, but the Texas High Plains AVA, it's over 8 million acres, and most of the flat terrain is between 3,000 and 4,000 feet above sea level. So it's all the area has to be irrigated from the Aqualala Aquifer. And so there's quite a few wineries and stuff in that area. They grow quite a variety of grapes, Barbera, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc. A lot of, actually, most of the list is made up of Vitis vinifera grapes there. Texas Davis Mountain AVA. This is in West Texas. Only one winery exists in existence when granted the AVA status in 1998, which specializes in Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Blanc. Or Sauvignon Blanc. I'm sorry. I was reading something else while I was trying to say. That's it. Cabernet Sauvignon and Sauvignon Blanc in this AVA. It is a big AVA, though, for that. It's in the Trans-Pecos region of West Texas, surrounded by the Chihuahuan Desert, and the Appalachian takes advantage of the cooler elevations and the lower rainfall of the mountains there, located between 4,500 and 8,300 feet. And it is the home of Pleasant Hill Winery as of this writing here. And they grow Cabernet Sauvignon and Sauvignon Blanc. That's it on the Texas Davis Mountain AVA. And then Texoma AVA. This was established in 2005. And it is on the south side of Lake Texoma and the Red River. And it forms it's right there at the border with Oklahoma. The region was discovered that grafting the Vitis vinifera grapevines onto the American Native American varieties of rootstock made it resistant to phylloxera. We've talked about phylloxera. And it's only 55 acres on this AVA. There's, as of this writing, six wineries located there, but this was in 2006, so I'm sure there's probably more now. But Texoma AVA, the wines of Texas, quite diversified. We read that earlier. Wineries, this shows over 200 wineries in Texas producing 4,100 tons of wine, making it the fifth largest wine-producing state in the nation. In fact, just a couple weeks ago, when we talked to my lookalike, Paul, he was telling us that Texas is now, moving up in the list. On this writing here, it shows that it was the fifth largest. I think he said that they moved up to the fourth largest. I think he said they passed Oregon, and now they're the fourth largest. The biggest producer of wine in the state of Texas is the University of Texas system of schools. They have over 1,000 acres planted near Fort Stockton in West Texas, and it's an experimental vineyard, and they lease it to a group that does Bordeaux wines, and people do it in the Bordeaux style. Two labels coming out of that for that is the St. Genevieve and Escondido Valley. So if you see wines from Texas labeled St. Genevieve or Escondido Valley, those are from the University of Texas vineyards. Interesting. There, I know University of Florida here has a lot of land, but I didn't know that, how much grapes they have. you can't look up something about Texas wine without seeing something about, let's see if I can see his name here. Where is it? Oh, geez. They don't, you know, here I'm saying this, and then all of a sudden I don't find it here. There is a doctor that they say helped save the French. He's the one that went over to France and saved the French from phylloxera. So, you know, every time you read something about Texas, you see how they saved the French from phylloxera. I don't know. Everybody takes credit for it. So, you know, if it's a guy from Texas, more power to him. Texas winery regions. There are actually four regions in Texas that are divided up into winery regions. The Central Texas region, which is really very central, it runs from the Mexican border on up to about Dallas and over to the west. I'm not that familiar with the cities in Texas, but it runs in the southern part of the state up to the central part of the state. That is the Central Valley wineries, or Central Texas wineries. Then you have Northeast Texas, which is obviously in the northeastern part, east of the Panhandle, and that area there is quite a few wineries in that also. Southeast Texas, this is on down closer to the border. To the Gulf. Not as many wineries there as you would expect. There are a lot, don't get me wrong, and we will hopefully talk to some of them, but there's actually more in the Northeast Texas than there are in the Southeast Texas region. And then, the last area, West Texas wineries, and that covers just what it says, the West Texas area, and maybe 15 wineries in that area there. So it's not as many, but again, you've got a lot of elevation and stuff in that area that will affect a lot higher elevation. So a little background on Texas. Wanted to cover that, wanted to tell you about that stuff. So as we start talking to these Texas wineries and stuff, it gives us a little bit better, clearer view of where they are, what they're doing and all, so we can keep up with them on that. Hopefully, we're going to be talking to some people from Texas over the next couple of 3, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever, if they start responding. They may, you know, and they may be harvesting, you know, again, I don't know, so, you know, but hopefully we'll be able to get people on. Some things I want to talk about a little bit here, some articles and stuff that I've seen, things I want to pass on to you. This is one of those information nights. If I've said some of this before, I apologize. I always try to make notes on it and probably put the date that I share this with you, and if I repeat something, it's just because for some reason I forgot to make a note. But most of the time I'm trying to stay on top of it. I don't know if I told you that a record was broke in Tampa. The Ceviche Tapas Bar and Restaurant broke the world record for the largest sangria at their Sangria Fest on June the 1st here in Tampa, Florida. They used more than 750 bottles of wine and 500 pounds of fruit with plenty of brandy and triple sec and syrup. They cleared the 1,000-liter minimum to set the record with a 1,022-liter beverage, according to the company. Guinness Book World Record spokesperson Christina Patrick was on hand to certify that it was a world record and gave them a plaque for it. So, yay Tampa for setting a new world record on that. Don't forget the champagne, the little thing here. According to new research, champagne does, quote, go straight to your head, end quote, in a manner of speaking. Scientists at the University of Reading in the United Kingdom have found that the phenolic compounds found in champagne can improve spatial memory, which is responsible for recording information about one's environment and storing the information for future navigation. So if you're going on a trip or something and you want to remember how to get there and back, drink champagne while you're doing it. Not while you're driving. You know, Let me qualify that. People will be out there and says, Ron said it now. Consumers can reap these benefits by drinking 1 to 3 glasses of champagne a week. And that's all it takes to help counteract memory loss associated with aging and delay the onset of degenerative brain disorders such as dementia, the research shows. So there you go. If we need yet another reason to be drinking champagne, it helps offset dementia. And I can't think of a better reason to be drinking champagne than to so that I can remember to drink it. So that sounds like a good deal to me. So proven, study. It'll help offset all that stuff. So get your champagne. We've been telling you, it's not just champagne, not just for special occasion, not just for holidays. It is all the time type drink now with everything. We miss these, but to harnessing the power of social conversation, some brands hosted Twitter chats surrounding celebrations of National Moscato Day on May the 9th and National Chardonnay Day on May the 23rd. We need to mark our calendar so we remember those next year. Gallo Family Vineyards hosted an hour-long national Twitter party to connect Moscato drinkers across the country. From 9 to 10 p.m. on the 9th, the participants gathered and shared hosting tips, food pairing suggestions, wine facts, and simple messages about the great things of the Moscato wine. And they used the hashtag, hashtag Moscato Day. Winty Vineyards, which positions itself as the first family of Chardonnay. A nice people there, too. I used to be very well acquainted with the Winty family when I lived out in California many years ago. It's probably been turned over to the kids and everything now, but connected the first time in Chardonnay, connected with fans and wine consumers across the country in a month-long celebration of the Chardonnay Vital. Beginning a month before National Chardonnay Day, Winty Vineyards' Twitter handle, at Winty, updated its profile picture to a theme image of the occasion and tweeted facts that about the Rital. And on May 22nd, the fifth-generation winemaker Carl Winty hosted a hashtag some chat on Twitter with Keeper Collection, a group dedicated to cultivating interactive online dialogue from leading wine personalities. So something to look forward to next year. Mark your calendars, May 9th, National Moscato Day, and May the 23rd, National Chardonnay Day. And we missed them. I feel bad about that. We should know that stuff in advance. A rosé by any other name. Little Black Dress has came out with a new rosé, a pink Pinot. Little Black Dress, you may have seen the bottles on the shelves. They're really pretty well distributed. They make a red and white wine that's been on the shelf. They've added a Devolicious pink Pinot to his portfolio. Devolicious pink Pinot is composed of 75% Pinot Grigio, 13% Muscat, 10% Chardonnay, and 2% Vignier wine. Quite a variety there. The Pinot Grigio, though, would probably jump out and take, although 13% Muscat is going to give you that little Muscat aroma. $750 bottle suggested at $11 for the wine. And Percept Wines, you may have seen the signs. Percept Wines purchased a new vineyard in Yakima Valley, just south of the Red Mountain, outside of Benton City, Washington. 174 acres currently planted in wine grapes, 66 acres in sweet cherries, and 22 acres in other fruit. So I don't know if they're going to dig it up or if they're going to incorporate that into some of their wines. There's nothing that says so on this thing here. Couple of things I want to bring up here. We talked about hydraulic fracturing 3 weeks ago. And no more than that now, it's been. Wow. We talked about hydraulic fracturing and what hydraulic fracturing effect might have on grapes. And very, very highly archive listen to show. People obviously were interested in it, and a lot of people did listen to it. And obviously people are interested in it because of the fact that it is hydraulic fracturing and what it's going to do to us and all that. We try not to form any opinions here. We bring up both pro and con. There is a movie out called Gasland. Mike saw that, emailed me the name of the guy that actually made the movie. Yep. We're going to see if we can't get him on the program. I sent an email out to him, and I will follow up and see if we can't get him on the program. But over the last couple, well, over the last 5 weeks or so, a lot of people have been listening to the program, and obviously it's something that people may be more interested in than what we thought originally. I've asked people that come into the winery if they're familiar with hydraulic fracturing, and I'm surprised at the number of people who are not familiar with it, and it's something that's going on. Although there's a lot of people who are quite familiar with it and are very, very opinionated about it, both pro and con. So it's not something that, you know, you take lightly regardless of what side you're on. But this came out of the July 20th newspaper here, and actually the Tampa Tribune. I'm a newspaper person. I enjoy newspapers. But when we talked about hydraulic fracturing on the program, we've talked about people up in the Pennsylvania area turning on their faucets and lighting them on fire. In fact, the show Gasland even showed that happening, where somebody turned on their faucet and you can actually light it, and it burned because of the gases coming out of it and all that from the hydraulic fracturing. This article, and I will read you the article because I'm not going to editorialize on this or anything. I'll read you the article. It states, fracking chemicals didn't taint water in Pennsylvania, study shows. And I quote, this is from Pennsylvania, the Associated Press. A landmark federal study on hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, shows no evidence that chemicals from the natural gas drilling process moved up to contaminate drinking water aquifers at a western Pennsylvania drilling site, the Department of Energy said Friday. After a year of monitoring, the researchers found that the chemical-laced fluid used to free gas trapped deep below the surface stayed thousands of feet below the shallower areas that supply drinking water, geologist Richard Hammack said. Although the results are preliminary, the study is still ongoing. They are the first independent look at whether the potentially toxic chemicals pose a threat to people during normal drilling operations. But the DOE researchers view the study as just one part of ongoing efforts to examine the impacts of a recent boom in oil and gas explorations, not a final answer about the risk. Drilling fluids tagged with unique markers were injected more than 8,000 feet below the surface at the gas well bore, but weren't detected in a monitoring zone at a depth of 5,000 feet. The researchers also tracked the maximum extent of the man-made fractures, and all were at least 6,000 feet below the surface. That means the potentially dangerous substances stayed only a mile away from the surface drinking water, or from the surface drinking water supplies, which are usually at depths of less than 500 feet. The study done by the National Energy Technology Laboratory in Pittsburgh marked the first time that a drilling company let government scientists inject special tracers into the fracking fluid and then continue regular monitoring to see whether it spread toward drinking water sources. Now, that end quote, that's the article. And again, to tie this into wine, and that's why we first started to talk about that, was because of the fact that grapevines dig down deep for their water. And now they're saying that this stays down below 6,000 feet, and I don't think grapevines dig that deep. So based on this study, we would have to say that we have no worry about the grapevines picking up any chemicals. And Mike and I were talking about this a little bit last week after we talked to our guest. And Mike brought up a point. Well, okay, that's great and that's wonderful, but what about the drying ponds that they use? If you are familiar with it, all this water and all this chemical that they pump into the ground, and then they use it for the fracturing of the shell, and then they bring this chemical-tainted water out and put it in great big plastic-lined drying ponds up on the surface and let the water evaporate, and then they have the condensed chemicals that they dispose of. And I don't know what the next step is.
It's like a retention pond type of thing where they, like you said, like they bring it up to the surface. It's like a large retention pond. They say that, you know, the chemicals go down 8,000 feet or whatever, so it's far enough below aquifers and things like that. But then they bring it back up like waste. And when you have a state like, Pennsylvania or somebody refuse to let them dump the waste from this because it was radioactive, they had to ship the stuff to, you know, several states down that where they could, you know, drop this stuff off at. I don't know. It still doesn't make any sense that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, and
it's one of those topics.
It's, and again, you know, it's in plastic lined drying ponds or evaporation ponds or whatever the official word or technical word is. And, you know, who's to say that there won't be some sort of leakage or something from that? And if you start getting any type of spillage or any type of leakage or any type of overflow or anything, then you just wiped out that buffer zone of no chemicals or anything in your drinking water or picked up by grapes or anything else. And so, I don't know. It's, you know, those drying ponds, I think, are something that really needs to be addressed. Okay, the original fracking is not going to contaminate the water. We'll give them that. But they're bringing all this chemical back up to the surface. And, you know, are they 100% safe on all this stuff? And is everything on that on the up and up? And is everything dried properly? Is there, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't have answers for all this stuff, but it's just there's, like Mike said, you know, they're pumping it in trucks and they're hauling it around and dumping it in other states and stuff like that too. So you don't have to be by the hydraulic fracturing to experience the chemicals and stuff that they have from that. Another article. This was in Sunday, August the 4th paper. Oil companies fracking in coastal waters off California. It says, forcing open cracks below seabed draws little attention. Again, I will read this article. It's out of San Francisco, the Associated Press. Companies prospecting for oil off California's coast have used hydraulic fracturing on at least a dozen occasions to force open cracks beneath the seabed. And now regulators are investigating whether this practice should require a separate permit and be subject to stricter environmental review. While debate has raged over fracking on land, prompting efforts to ban or severely restrict it, offshore fracking has occurred with little attention in sensitive coastal waters where for decades new oil leases have been prohibited. Hundreds of pages of federal documents released by the government to the Associated Press and advocacy groups show regulators have permitted fracking in the Pacific Ocean at least 12 times since the late 1990s and have recently approved a new project. The targets are the vast oil fields in the Santa Barbara Channel, site of the 1969 spill that spewed more than 3 million gallons of crude oil into the ocean, spoiled miles of beaches, and killed thousands of birds and other wildlife. The disaster prompted a moratorium on new drill leases and inspired federal clean water laws and the modern environmental movement. Companies are doing the offshore fracking, which involves pumping hundreds of thousands of gallons of salt water, sand, and chemicals into undersea shell and sand formations to simulate old existing wells into new oil production. Federal regulators thus far have exempted the chemical fluid used in offshore fracking from the nation's clean water laws, allowing companies to release fracking fluid into the sea without filling a separate environmental impact report or statement looking at the possible effects. That exemption was affirmed this year by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the Associated Press found. Marine scientists, petroleum engineers, and regulatory officials interviewed by the AP could point to no studies that have been performed on the effects of fracking fluids on the marine environment. Research regarding traditional offshore exploration have found that drilling fluids can cause reproductive harm to some marine creatures. That's the end of the article. So, they're doing it. If they're putting these chemicals into the ocean, the currents of the ocean tend to wash up on shore. Well, we're not going to get into the environmental studies and the environmental impacts of that. But we've been talking about fracking, and I saw these two articles, and I wanted to bring them up and let you know about them and tell you what was going on those. So we will do some more programming on hydraulic fracturing. It's an interesting subject, so we will do that. A new package. We'll get back into wine here, away from that fracking. A new package. The Vinny wine is breaking the mold, figuratively speaking, for bottle shape. The brand owner, the Vinny Exceptional Wine by the Glass, and you can look that up at www.thevinny.com. Out of Sonoma, California, uses a custom-designed glass tube as the bottle for its high-end single-serving wines. The package is a glass vial. It's made with a very lightweight, seamless glass, says the CEO of Vinny, and it has elegant appeal. Though tall and narrow, the tubes can stand on their own. Each 10-inch tall tube holds 187 milliliters of wine, which is one-fourth of a regular bottle, and they're sealed with a screw cap. The closure familiar with most people in the wine industry. The Vinny owners, who are boutique winemakers, developed the package as a by-the-glass alternative for premium wines. The retail price is about $10 or a little less. The company sells the products in four packs and as singles. We're trying to revolutionize fine wine and make it more accessible, said the president. Even people who aren't necessarily wine drinkers may look at this and say, wow, this is really cool. I want to try it. They also acknowledge the price point is higher than the lower quality single-serving wines in plastic bottles. And they're optimistic, though, that for under $10, consumers will give it a shot. It says at the other end of the consumer spectrum, onophiles benefit from the package because it lets them enjoy one glass of wine without opening an expensive bottle. And in cases where one person prefers white and the other prefers red, it's a good way for each person to enjoy their own wine. The company is currently blending, bottling wines blends at the Vinny format in a single bottle format or single container format. And to tubes, its red and white blends are gourmet markets, hotels, gift shops, weddings, stuff like that. They think it will be great for things like individual serves, like weddings and different things. So a new container for wine. Speaking of containers, the stackables. We talked about the stackables before. I found the stackables. They had a Target, as a matter of fact. And I bought it. They had a Pinot Grigio. It was, yeah, Pinot Grigio. Nice. It was a pleasant Pinot Grigio. One little single serve glass. It was fun. It was interesting. It was easy to open. We zipped it down the side and popped off the little single plastic glass that was there. And it was very enjoyable, a nice little thing. Couldn't swirl it. That was
my complaint. I mean, if you want to swirl it in the glass, which, you know, many people like to do. I love the smell of wine, and I like swirling the wine in the glass a lot. But couldn't swirl it. But it was interesting. Then you had these four little 187-milliliter plastic glasses when you're done, stemless glasses. So, interesting thing. Another little thing I want to pass on to you here. This is new technology launched. This is out of Decanter, which Design Magazine. A new gadget developed by U.S. manufacturer Coravin, C-O-R-A-V-I-N, Coravin, I believe it's pronounced, has been released, allowing wine lovers to access any wine, anytime, in any quantity, without ever removing the cork. What, you say? Yeah, that's what I said. What? But this is the Coravin Wine Access System allows users to withdraw a desired quantity from a sealed bottle via a hollow needle that pierces the foil and cork. The remaining wine is then pressurized with argon gas, which has been used for years to slow down oxidation. The cork reseals itself naturally. Corks tend to, you know, close up. And the wine in the bottle continues to evolve as it would normally without exposure. Coravin inventor Greg Lambrecht, who is an MIT educated engineer and also a medical device developer, refined this over 13 years of testing and trying out and all that. He said, "I want to eradicate the phrase 'too good to drink' from the English language." Who says is who typically has several bottles on the go for years. "I drink a bottle of 61 Chateau La Mission Haute-Brion with about 14 people over the course of 4 years." Because he's pulling a little bit out of time. And it's absolutely unique. "I blind tested numerous wines preserved using Coravin with fresh samples with sommeliers, masters of wine, and other experts, and we could not detect any difference." He also continued, "When a winemaker can't tell the difference between a Coravin sample and a fresh sample of their own wine, that means it's pretty much foolproof." Daniel Primack, director of London wine accessory retailer around the world, said a couple of clients have mentioned Coravin, but he has not tried it himself. He says, "I've seen thousands of gadgets come and go, so I'd like to see how this system fares over time before I call it life-changing. But I have an open mind." The U.S. Cost of the Coravin 100 system is $299 and is being used in restaurants, including New York's Del Posto, and which, by the way, the co-owner of that is an investor in the Coravin, and 11 Madison Park in San Francisco's Aquarella restaurant. So $299. You can actually puncture this needle right through the foil, through the cork, into the wine, suck out what you want, and then pump the argon gas into it through the same little hole, pop it out, and you've got a sealed bottle again. Interesting. I saw that and I was going, oh, that's unique. So I don't know how well it's going to go. It might be interesting over a period of time. Maybe when we walk into restaurants, we can say, is this Coravin saved or is this fresh? And they'll say, well, you really can't tell anyway. No. I got lots of stuff. I'm not going to go into all of it here because, I ended up talking about Texas longer and all that. So, and we want to talk about the festival coming up this weekend. But here's something I do want to cover here. A Chilean wine producer, Contratoro, has added a Sauvignon Blanc and a Pinot Noir to its Marquis de Casa Contro range. It's a 2011 vintage wines for both of them, retailing for $23 for the Sauvignon Blanc, and the Pinot Noir is a 2012 vintage
it is retailing for approximately $26. A little bit expensive on those two, but supposed to be good. Cabot Wine, we've seen those all over the place. Cabot Wine is coming out with some new sizes of bottles. They've got a 187 milliliter 4-pack, a 375 milliliter, 750, 1.5, all sorts of stuff for their varieties. Pinot Grigio, Chardonnays, Rieslings, Moscatos, Pinot Noir, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay. So they've got all sorts of new things coming out for that stuff. New sizes. This is awards from a Beverage World magazine. Beverage World, pretty cool magazine. I like Beverage World. It's just got a really lot of information on wine in there. Beverage World gave out awards for wines, and one of them, Akronym. They gave out the a gold to it because of the wine, the labeling, the bottle, everything. Acronym, A-C-R-O-N-Y-M. If you see Acronym out there, actually they're saying it's very appealing to the millennial group of wine drinkers. And because it is so appealing to the millennial group, it is probably it's going to explode on it. So an Acronym was given a gold medal. Acronym Great Red Wine. They gave a silver to they gave a silver to Cal Natural. Cal Natural comes in a box of two varietals. The Cabernet Sauvignon and the Chardonnay come in a 500 milliliter and 1 liter containers. Box type containers. They gave a silver medal to that because of the fact that it holds the flavors well. It's a nice presentation on the box and all that. And then Quaint Sangria. I haven't seen Quaint Sangria on the stores, but they're saying that the Quaint Sangria. Just all you need to do is just add fruit, stir it up, and it gives you probably the better tasting sangria that's available out there anywhere right now. So just some stuff that Beverage World just came out with prizes, or with first, second, and third prizes on that. This is rather long, so I'm not going to go into this one tonight. But there's new technology. We've all heard of the QR codes, QRC, or QR codes. We've seen those and all that. There's new technology that they're saying that could be replacing the QR codes that you can see popping up on your wine bottles. That's just a tease there. I'm not going to tell you about that and all that, but it's something that's coming up. California is a country when it comes to wine. Now, beverage alcohol stores around the U.S. classified the state alongside France, Australia, Italy, and other countries as its own region, which is true. They don't talk about United States wines. They talk about California wines. You've got California and France and Australia, which is just, you know, basically it's viewed as its own country in wines. Part of a year-long California wine supplement that's been going on, California is actually perceived as a country in itself by most everybody. The national display of California wine stores with regional displays, 49.7% of them, California displays, 63.5%. So actually it's singled out. California wine facings, when you go into stores, average red facings are 52.6. And average white facings are on the shelf facings 45.5. A lot of California wines out there. National brand distribution. Percentage of stores with a California display with each brand was stocked. Woodbridge, 87.2% of the wine, of the stores that sell wine carry Woodbridge. Beringer, number two, 86%. Sutter Home, 85%. Barefoot, 84. Kendall Jackson, 78. Carlo Rossi, 58. Skinny Girl, 56.9, 7%, which is, I'm not don't remember seeing that often. I know I'm familiar with, but that's odd. Rodney Strong, 56%. Jay Lohr, 52%. That's what I'm enjoying tonight, as a matter of fact, is a late harvest Jay Lohr Riesling. So, and Boda Box, 30%. So California wines are, whenever we talk to anybody, they're always talking about California's impact on wines and stuff, and everybody always compares it to California. The highest California wine markets: Boston, number one; Buffalo, number two; Jacksonville, number three; New York, number four; and Tampa, number five. And the number of stores, this is really interesting too. The percentage of those stores with a California display that had regional displays, not all of them have regional displays, but the percentage that do have regional displays: Boston, 95%, Buffalo, 88%, Jacksonville, 72%, New York, 89%, Tampa, 100% of the stores that had displays for regions had a California display. So it's out there. California has become a force in itself when it comes to wines. We already know that. We're all familiar with that. But it's actually, they're saying it's compared to and as a country, which is amazing. So a lot of California wines out there. Over 4,000 wineries in California alone. Just boggles the mind. And
that is a lot.
That is a lot. It really is.
That's huge.
And they all, they're all doing it. They're all making it. They're all surviving. So, that shows you how the market for wine is, too. So,
yeah.
It's just amazing. So, that's it. I'll quit. Now, there's other things I'm going to here, but it's, after 8 o'clock, and we still need to talk. I'll let you talk about the two things.
Oh.
Saturday, our festival, and Sunday, our class.
I didn't even go down that far on the 811. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. Yeah, I didn't scroll down that far on the newsletter. If y'all haven't subscribed to the newsletter, you need to go to the website right now at go to the website at FloridaEstatesWines.com. Look on the left-hand side, and you'll see a thing down there to subscribe to the newsletter. It comes out every 2 weeks or so. Yeah, every 2 weeks. I got to finish this. And you'll be kept informed on what's happening at the winery, about Wine Fest, the show here, all about wine. There's a link there as well as information. Wine classes that are coming up, which I see now. The next one is on August the 11th on Sunday. There's also recipes, and there's some really cool stuff, wine facts. And there's always really cool things there in the wine facts area and the recipes and everything else. So go to the website, subscribe. You'll get information every 2 weeks, like I said, and it's a great read. They'll also tell you about the tip jar. Last month was for hospice, great cause there. And this month, again, it's another great cause. If you stop by the winery, the tip jar next to the on the counter there, this month is for Liberty Manor. Liberty Manor is a set of four homes in Hillsborough and Pasco counties that provide shelter and assistance for homeless vets. So stop by and put a little offering in the tip jar, and it all adds up, and that'll be provided for Liberty Manor, which does a great service for homeless vets. So definitely stop by the winery. We'll give you details on all that stuff coming up near the end of the show, which I guess we're getting close to it. But you do have a wine fest this Saturday. That is August the 10th from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m., and for more information, I have no idea which one this is. I'm just going to hit the play button, and we'll be back. We'll give you some more details in a minute. Hang on. In exactly a minute.
Coming up this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it's Wine Fest at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Come out and enjoy the live music. Relax with a glass of world-class wine. Participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have fun and shop our vendors offering many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. WineFest is a great time to pick up unique gift items. Enjoy your weekend with us at WineFest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From I-75, take exit 285 and turn west for approximately 4 miles. See you Saturday at WineFest.
I was just listening to that. I forgot which one that was, but it just sounds like it recorded in the bathroom or something somewhere. I don't know what that was. It's like, what? That's next on my list.
Yeah, I mean, really, not that's, that bad.
Like, where was this at? Anyway, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. this Saturday, August the 10th. Come out and enjoy the weekend. It's going to be great. And it's still warm here, so, you know, those of you all visiting us during our summer down here, it's a great time to stop by. And there's also live entertainment. Musician Sam Osborne is going to be there, so it's a great time. Have a great glass of wine, relax, and enjoy the day at Florida State's Winery. There's also wine tastings with Ron. That's right, the one and only. You'll be able to meet radio show host, vice president and general manager of Florida State's Winery. That's Ron. You hear him every week here on Florida State's on All About Wine, and now you can meet him in person. And I believe he looks like one of our previous guests, almost a mirror image of him.
Yeah,
and,
I know. That's amazing.
You can find him. Yes. And there's also a lot of unique and handmade items and some brand names that you've known for years. So stop by, do some shopping, and don't forget this I just picked up here. Monday the 12th, so it's right around the corner after this weekend, is National Gift Day. So you – I just made that up. But come by. What the heck? No.
Yes.
Every 2 weeks on Monday is National Gift Day.
All right. And, gifts. I like gifts.
And what a great time. That's right. What a great time to do some shopping for gifts and at WineFest this weekend, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. You're going to have a lot of crafts out there, a lot of great let me see, I'm going down the list here. Vendors, and by the way, if you are a vendor, this I might throw in as well. I believe if that, unless that's changed, being a vendor out here and selling what you're offering is free to you. So you can't find that in a lot of places, because you try and go just about anywhere and set up you know, a little table or something, and you'll be dishing out some bucks. Join you know, with the Florida State's Winery on the weekends, and you don't have to pay anything. So enjoy it, and it's a great big area. It's underneath some giant oak trees, providing some incredible shade, and you'll have a great time. And let's see. And everybody's in a good mood. It's not the, you know, I've been to quite a few of them, and everybody's in a good mood. They're enjoying, you know, the day. And it's just a great relaxing time, and family friendly, so you can bring the kids. It's not, you know, not anything that they can't attend, and it's great. So and also pet friendly, but make sure that your pets are, you know, up to date on the shot records and stuff like that, and on a leash. And that's pretty much out of respect for the other people who are there, who, you know, that kind of thing. So, but you have a lot of vendors out there. It's going to be a great time. A lot of handcrafted stuff. Some well-named brands, and you know, you really enjoy it. There's all kinds of things out there. So come on down, Florida State's Winery, Wine Fest this weekend, Saturday, August the 10th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then Sunday, I'm guessing you still have seats available?
Yes, possibly? We do. Yes, we do.
Okay, so you definitely want to get in on a wine class. It's 3 hours. It's a great presentation. You learn all about a brief history of wines, the wine grape varietals, diseases of wine grapes. Let's see, wine glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting and rating wines, and sampling of wines, and a discussion. It's fantastic. We do ask that you do RSVP. Contact the winery at area code 813-996-2113. Reserve your spot for the wine class, which is coming up this Sunday. That's August the 11th, from 1 p.m. until 4 p.m. All right, contact them. You get more information, all that good stuff. Don't forget, go to the website and subscribe to the newsletter. You'll be informed about all kinds of cool stuff and hours and everything, which we give at the end of the show anyway. But do that, and it's great. So you'll definitely enjoy it. And I would say, you know, we guarantee it, but it's you will. Don't worry about it. And then they'll go, or else what? You know?
Or else what?
Yes, I mean.
Yeah.
There's that 1.001% that's going to, oh, really? You know?
Oh, really?
So, yeah. challenge. But, yeah, I looked up, let's see, National Wine Day is May 25th. And
wow.
There are. I'm not sure. Well, I don't think they're just saying anything, but that's the official day each year. Each year it falls on May 25th, and they actually have a Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/wineday, all one word, no dashes or anything, you'll find the official, the so-called, I guess it's official, page. I don't know if this is like government approved or what. I looked up Moscato Day, and first I had to learn how to spell Moscato. And then it's one of those misleading. You know, what was that again? Google.
Do you mean the computer says? Yes. Do you mean?
Yes. In this case, it was Google disagreeing with my spelling, and I did find a reference for May 9th for National Moscato Day, and that was for 2013. I don't know if it's the same every year, like National Wine Day, or if that changes. Anyway, National Chardonnay Day this year was May 23rd. I'm seeing different references for next year, but I can't find a verification of that. So if anybody, and I know you gave it out as May 23rd, but I saw a 24th, I saw a 22nd. But you know what?
Wow.
Every day could be Chardonnay Day. So
good point. Good point. And every day could be Wine Day and everything. Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's what they say on the Wine Day Facebook page. It says there are 364 unofficial wine days. So have a wine, you know.
Yeah. There you go. I like it.
Yeah. And the Vinny.com, that's a cool website. These things look like test tubes or something. I don't. They're like
tall test tubes, yep, with a little screw cap,
yep,
on it.
Yep, there you go. Very interesting. I never saw that before. So they're coming out with all kinds of cool things. Very interesting. And enjoyed it as always. Hope you did out there listening to us. And we have about 12 minutes. Any
one
last
thing.
People?
I want to bring up there. Joyce Joy of Wine. She's been on with us before. I'm always referring to her and all that. Check out her latest blog, wine blog. She talks about the second hailstorm that ravaged Bordeaux recently. It was a week ago Friday or something like that. It lasted for about 10 minutes, but it really did some damage. So check out her blog. She talks about it on that. I'll refer you to that on that. Joy's Joy of Wine blog. But it talks about the bad hailstorm hitting Bordeaux.
Wow.
Yeah, nasty. The second one. I mean, they've had...
Why? I mean, all of a sudden they're...
Yeah, well, you know, it's... You know. Who knows? Lots of reasons. I mean, you know, climate change, all sorts of things are causing, you know, the weather to be just really strange. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I wasn't sure if they were having some kind of, like, a weather thing, like this happens every so many years or something going on over there, but I don't know.
No, it
cycles?
Does. Yeah, okay. Not that I know of. I'm hearing more about these you know, horrible weathers over there than I've ever heard before. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a new phenomenon or something that, it does affect grapes.
Sure.
It destroys the grapes there. And, you know, I mean, hailstorms do that. Mm. And so, it's a sad thing. But check it out. She talks about it. She tells a little bit about it and all that on her blog.
All right. Let's see. What else? 15th would be the next show. Let me write that down. Let me write this stuff down.
So the next show we will be talking to Texas. If we don't talk to Texas, maybe I can get the guy on about hydraulic fracturing. That might be interesting too. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tune in to our Facebook page on All About Wine.
and All About Wine BTR. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
And
The Facebook page also. Yeah, the Facebook page is facebook.com/ All About Wine BTR. So
You'll
get and you're updating that quite a bit. So
yeah,
that is the best way. Yep,
that's the best way. You can keep on track of who we have on or what we're going to have on and stuff like that. I try to keep up on that. And if you have any suggestions, anything, as always, let us know.
Mm-hmm. It's all about wine101@gmail.com. You can email the show anytime. You know, in between shows, whatever you want to do, just email us at your convenience. And you want to be a guest, you know something about wine, you want to share with us where you've been. We had, who was it, last week, we had guests that have been all over the world. And,
yeah, Barry and Rory.
Very interesting. Eubank. Very interesting discussion last week from where they've been, and that was really, really enjoyable.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun.
Yep.
So if you've traveled and if you have experience on wine, or if you are a wine person, or if you, you know, anything, we'll be happy to get you on and talk with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So contact us. The email address, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Contact us now. We're standing by. We will see you all. We will see you all on August the 15th. 7 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll go ahead and close the show for the evening. I don't see anybody on hold, you're listening and enjoying the show silently, but you do have a voice, and we'd love to hear from you, so contact us. We'll see you all next time, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And
thank you, everyone.
We'll talk again, and
see you next
hear week. What you have to say. Yep, thanks a lot. Have a good
Thank you.
Have a good week.
Right. Everyone dance.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.